more on blind squirrels and acorns next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your recovering host, Barry Sheets, the executive director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is, now I'm going to call him my primary host, good friend, vice chairman of our Policy Institute, fellow analyst, and all-around great guy, and the guy who helps out the pinch, Chuck Michaels.
And Barry, it's good to hear you. As bad as you sound so much better than the first time I talked to you on Monday night. That's absolutely amazing.
Well, you know, it's that old Samuel Clemens line that rumors of my demise have been greatly exaggerated. I'm just not sure it was too greatly exaggerated a couple of days ago.
Yeah, well, things can go south fast, and that's what happened with you.
Oh, yeah. One minute I was feeling fine, and by the late afternoon, this was on Sunday morning, go to church, feeling fine. Get home Sunday afternoon, doing okay. By the time evening rolled around, it felt like I had been run over by a truck. And everything else, and now you're hearing some of the aftermath of it, and I apologize that my voice sounds a little strange, but at least I have a voice, so I'm grateful to God for that.
There you go.
And I'm actually up out of a horizontal position. So it's a good thing. It's a good thing.
We'll take it.
But while I was gone for the last few days, Chuck, you filled in admirably. As a matter of fact, I got a chance to hear one of our programs there that you did, and want to say congratulations on handling the job solo extremely well. I appreciated it.
Well, thank you, and it's as usual, it's a scary experience, but we got the job done.
Well, you know what? We still are working on the job because there's a lot more to talk about in relation to this issue because, you know, I'm glad you brought the topic up, Chuck, because right now we've got a lot of people out there who are trying to make decisions on who they're going to support for president, but the reasoning and the rationales that I'm hearing from a lot of people, and I don't care who their candidate is, I don't care if it's Newt Gingrich or Rick Santorum or Mitt Romney or Ron Paul or any of the Republicans or even a Barack Obama, what I'm not hearing out of most people is that their candidate understands and adheres to the Constitution. Yes, we do hear that out of the Ron Paul folks quite a bit, but you just don't hear that's not that doesn't seem to be at the top of people's list of primary priorities for their candidate. We always hear terms like electability and, you know, how that person can do, you know, head to head against Barack Obama, which obviously is a measure because, you know, you don't want to bring forth someone who can't pull 2% of the vote and put them up as the standard bearer. But I think from our perspective and from a principled policy perspective, having someone who understands how our Constitution works and how our founders intended it to work is very, very important.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting that this paper that Newt Gingrich's campaign has put together really demonstrates that someone truly does get it on the issue of the separation of powers that are contained within the Constitution. Basically, and I will repeat what I said in yesterday's show, I don't necessarily think this is truly Newt Gingrich's position, but it is at least homage to this particular position that there really is a separation of powers. There really are checks and balances between the branches, including the judiciary branch, and that these checks and balances actually mean something. Well, that is a position that's all too rare today.
You know, that's interesting that you say that because that was kind of how I was going to lead into coming back today was, you know what, for all of, and I had a chance to read through some of that multi-page document and saw the highlights, you know, basically I read the executive summary version of it. And yes, I understand that somebody understands the way the Constitution works. My issue with this, though, Chuck, and I think you hit on it, is I'm not sure I believe that Newt Gingrich believes that he well-crafted political card on the table, especially in an early caucus state like Iowa, which is heavily pro-family, heavily Christian-oriented, heavily limited government oriented. As a matter of fact, right now, you know, as you've been watching the media and as well as I have, and I think most of our listeners have, right now it looks like polling is showing that Dr. Ron Paul is actually taking the lead in Iowa, to the consternation of most of the politicos in Iowa and nationally, to even to the point where some of them, the governor of Iowa, saying, well, if Ron Paul wins the Iowa straw poll, it really doesn't mean anything, and whoever comes in second is going to be the person that's going to be the have the momentum. I mean, just how the people are bending over backwards to basically try to say that, okay, well, someone who's actually resonating with voters, well, that can't be the person that we pick, because we kind of had this already planned out, and you see, well, Newt here, and look, he put out the thing, and he's talking about the court. He's doing all the right things, so why shouldn't he be the nominee?
There are two prongs to this, and you and I have discussed this with other Christian leaders, and the fact is that we were asked about this, and when Ron Paul's name came up, We both said, it doesn't matter. It does not matter if Ron Paul won every single primary and every single caucus. It would not matter. He would not be the nominee.
That's right.
What would happen when the party would step in and basically appoint superdelegates? The Democrats actually have a far worse problem on this end than the Republicans do because of the way their delegates are awarded. But the fact is that Ron Paul could win everything and still would not be the nominee of the Republican Party, because the Republican Party elites do not want him.
And would engineer the convention in order to make sure that it didn't happen.
That's exactly what would happen. Basically, what would happen was some way would be found to deny Ron Paul. And I think Ron Paul knows this.
And it's funny that we talked about this weeks ago with these leaders, because that's what we're seeing right now in Iowa, when you've got the head of the Republican Party and the governor of the state, who's a Republican, all saying exactly the same thing. Well, it doesn't matter if he wins. It doesn't matter if he wins. Matter of fact, if he wins, it could hurt our position as having the caucus. It could diminish our star as the first in the nation if we pick this guy as the standard bearer, as the winner of this caucus. Yeah, you know what? The big problem is, and Chuck, and I think that what we're getting down to is, folks, first of all, let me say, we're not picking anybody right now. We're not leaning toward or against any of the candidates in this race. Well, okay, maybe we're leaning against a few of them, because there are some who just honestly don't qualify to be running for office. But the ones who are there and we're talking about, we're not picking winners and losers here. We're not supporting or endorsing any candidate. So I want to make sure that's clear very first before the Ron Paul fans start getting mad at us for not supporting Ron, or the Newt Gingrich fans get mad at us for taking shots at Newt. The point is, we're here to point out what's going on and why it's important that we look past the media headlines and we look past all the things that are the talking heads are saying, and get down to where the principles lie. And the principle here is that we have a system that will pay lip service to those founding ideals that we hold dear, that say all the right things, but when push comes to shove, it's still business as usual.
Well, and that's kind of the second prong of my proposal here, the way I've analyzed this. The first prong, of course, was it doesn't matter what happens with Ron Paul, he's not going to get the nomination. The second prong is Gingrich recognizes that, and I think he recognizes the fact that Paul's message resonates among a lot of people about this constitutional issue. Now, I'll be quite honest, the reason I don't believe Gingrich's take on this is because he's such a constitutional bandit. And again, this is based on his record. The Constitution says what Newt Gingrich wants it to say when he wants it to say it. Now, that being said, he understands that there are people out here like you and me who are doing a little more analysis and looking for a more concrete view of the Constitution. And he's come out with this position, which in a state, Iowa, which understands judicial activism all too clearly, because I think last year they turned out three state Supreme Court justices who were up for what they call a retention election, And the main reason was because they had changed the social fabric of Iowa by ruling that same-sex marriage could not be banned in Iowa. And this is the one and only reason these people were not retained. So he knows that Iowans understand that the courts have way overstepped their constitutional limitations. And even at a state level, people understand that this is happening both at state and federal level. And this is why he has come out with this right before the Iowa caucuses. Yeah. This is designed to grab the attention of Iowans who are beginning to get to grasp that if you're going to maintain the fabric of your society the way you want it, you're going to have control over the judiciary branch, because it has become way overly powerful. And that's the second prong here. He's basically attempting, he's using all this propaganda. Ron Paul can't win. Ron Paul can't do this. Ron Paul can't do that. He'll never win. You know, the self-fulfilling prophecy of Ron Paul can't possibly win. And the reason he can't possibly win is because everybody believes he can't win, and therefore they won't vote for him. Everybody wants to vote for a winner. Okay. So maybe he can siphon off some of this thing by people who are going to look at this and go, you know, this is not so bad.
That's true. Now, the thing that it brings to my mind, the more I think about this, and I think you're right in the sense that I believe that this document was designed specifically to target what was happening in Iowa and the sentiment of the voters. The fundamental question has to be asked of candidate Gingrich. Yes, you put this together and you say the courts have been need to be reined in, but are you proposing that you as president will be able to do something about that unilaterally? Or are you really going to be a constitutionalist and look back and understand that it's Congress who has the authority for subpoena powers, for impeachment, for limiting the jurisdiction of the courts and limiting the number of those inferior courts to the Supreme Court? The president has nothing to do with this.
And what you've exposed is one of the truths that these candidates don't want you to understand, most voters to understand, and that is they're making big promises on the basis that Congress will go along with their agenda. And the fact is, in many cases, Congress is going to look at some of these agenda items and go, baby, I don't want anything to do with that. And right now, it's not in Congress's best interest to rein in the judiciary, because on the liberal side, they're basically getting what Newt Gingrich in this paper calls a 9-member constitutional convention who can come in and change the Constitution and make it say anything they want to on the whim of their own opinion. And on the conservative side, they have a campaign issue.
Well, of course.
Look at these nasty black robe deities sitting out over here in D.C. And basically, you're going to get, it doesn't matter what Newt Gingrich says he's going to do. First of all, he has to have the cooperation of Congress, and that doesn't seem to be in the offing. And basically, what he's going to do is end up being a frustrated warrior, and he's going to come out and do the Bill Clinton thing and shuffle his feet and put his hands in his pocket and look down and say, I never worked harder in my life to get you that middle class tax that I just couldn't do it. If we all remember when that all came out, well, Newt Gingrich won't be quite that disingenuous. He'll come out and couch it in terms, if he gets elected president, he'll couch it in terms, some highly intellectual parliamentary maneuver was done and we couldn't get it done and blah, 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 blah. But it'll be the same. The net effect will be the same.
Well, I don't know, as much as Newt has reached across the aisle already to people like Hillary Clinton when it comes to global warming and Nancy Pelosi on various similar issues, I think maybe he thinks that he'll have quite a bit of support that he can pull from the Democrat side of the aisle. But again, I think you're right. The point is that nobody wants to change the way the game's being played now, because to go back to the Constitution, to go back to the checks and balances that our founders put into the document to operate our government would mean to lose those power bases and those excuses for inaction that they are comfortable with at this point.
That's right. Now, you know what? The problem is we are now out of time.
I figured we might be.
As always, we just get into the really into the meat of it and we run out of time. Join us tomorrow at 5:30 for another edition of Principles and Policies. We look forward to seeing you.